Welcome. Today is Wednesday, June the 15th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, stories of heroism and unity as residents cope with what's happened in Orlando, Florida. The National Rifle Association is again under the gun. President Obama's anger over Donald Trump's statements becoming more and more apparent.
Calling a threat by a different name does not make it go away. This is a political distraction.
Also ahead, what new and exciting things will come out of this week's Electronic Entertainment Expo, and lots of talk about Pink's new single. It's all on today's International Edition, and we begin with the latest on the worst mass shooting in modern American history. Following the murder of 49 people and the wounding of 53 others, there are stories of heroism and a mountain of grief. VOA's Arash Arabasadi, who is in Orlando, is with us. Arash, this tragedy seems to have brought the community together. What are you hearing from residents you're speaking with about what happened?
It's always difficult to meet people under these circumstances, but the people that we've met have just been so incredibly strong and so incredibly unified. We were at a rally last night, a vigil downtown in Orlando, where there were thousands of people, and they were not at all from one walk of life or another. There were old, young, gay, lesbian, black, white, I mean, you name it, everybody was there, and it was just this tremendous show of support from the entire community. And when we conducted our interviews yesterday afternoon, they had raised $1.5 million at the time of the interview for the survivors and for those who were unable to survive. And that money would be taking care of everybody's medical bills. It would be taking care of everybody's funeral expenses. That number today is more than $5 million. So in a day's time,
wow,
it's more than tripled. And it's significantly more than $5 million. So there's a global outpouring of support. And everyone that I've spoken with, whether it be where we went to get lunch or whether we'd stop at a gas station, there really is this hashtag of Orlando Strong. It really is something that we have felt, I have felt, on the streets and in the community here in Orlando.
And I know there are 53 wounded survivors from Sunday's shooting. You were at the hospital where they were taken. Tell us about what that scene was like.
There was media from all over the world. I mean, this is a story that has obviously garnered the attention far beyond Orlando, far beyond the United States. Yes, it's another mass shooting in the United States, but it's such a huge appeal, a wide-spreading appeal. It impacts so many people who have ties one way or another to this story. I mean, after all, we're all human beings. And so the media was kind of as diverse as the city itself. We met a family member. We met a cousin of someone who was still being treated, and she wasn't entirely sure how her cousin was doing in recovery, and she asked that we not identify her. But she was going around kind of taking photos with her phone and shooting video to put together a scrapbook to keep showing him. This is the concern that people have from around the world about you, and this is what people want to know about you. So she kind of wanted to give back to him and say, here's what I'm seeing outside that you're not seeing while you're here in this bed. And so we went to this news conference, and when it was done, we were fortunate enough to have a brief amount of time with residents and with surgeons and emergency personnel who, for them, on the early hours of Sunday this past week, it was a shift. They were there at the hospital as they normally would be, and all of a sudden, here come these wounds. And one resident described to us how much they've trained and prepared for these emergency moments. But when it actually happens, there's something different. And even though they were all ready, they described wounds from this rifle that were small upon entry, but large enough that you could put your fist into them in the exit wounds. And to hear people talk like this and to know that,
wow,
they went from one person to another person to another person to another person that night, and bed after bed was full, and everybody's screaming. It's chaotic because everyone's barking orders at one another. And to just know that they were so calm and cool and collected, I can only imagine in the chaos of those hours on Sunday morning, what it must have been like.
Have any of the survivors that are still recovering from that night come forward to share any details about the experience?
There were some folks who did actually speak in a later news conference. The stories they've told, by now I think probably a lot of us have seen or heard about this one bar patron who was texting his mother and saying, I'm in the bathroom and I hear him coming and he's getting closer and I'm going to die. And to just kind of imagine what that's like, and that's all in a text. And so today when someone came out and spoke and said he was shooting and he shot at my head and he missed and he hit my hand and he fired again and he shot me and it struck my hip and I went to the ground and I didn't move. I did nothing. I wanted him to think that I was dead. And he kept shooting for another 5-10 minutes. He just kept going.
Hmm.
So if you can kind of imagine that we're hearing from an eyewitness of someone who was struck twice, that you can't imagine what a gunshot wound feels like, but to be hit twice in rapid succession and then just kind of lay there as if nothing happened, because that was his only chance for survival.
All right. Well, we appreciate the update. Thanks so much. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reporting from Orlando. Not an easy story to cover. And the massacre does continue to dominate social media. Let's find out what people are saying with social media correspondent G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori. The National Rifle Association is in the hot seat after the shooting incident. But a high-level official with the NRA has actually criticized the Obama administration in a statement written to the USA Today. One of its executive directors, Chris Cox, wrote to the paper that political correctness prevented federal action from being taken against the gunmen before the attack. He elaborated, "Destroy radicalism, not the right of law-abiding Americans to protect themselves." More than 1,000 people responded to the USA Today's Facebook post, and the most popular response is this: "You're absolutely right. Mr. Obama should do the right thing and declare the NRA a terrorist organization that seeks to militarize society with weapons of mass destruction and arrest the leadership."
The shooting has definitely reinvigorated the gun rights debate in the U.S. for sure.
And absolutely.
We've also talked about the faith aspect of this incident. Any other religious leaders besides Pope Francis speaking out?
Yep. Dalai Lama. He is, as you know, the Tibetan Buddhist spiritual leader, and he's visiting Washington, D.C. for an event at the U.S. Institute of Peace. He opened the event with a one-minute silent prayer and spoke on the role of youth leaders to resolve conflict in the world. He didn't really tweet about the mass shooting, but if you want to hear his speech, you can head over to the Facebook account of the USAP and watch their live show. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Follow me at Lori London. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Could new gun laws close terror loopholes and prevent mass shootings? At least 60,000 migrants died or went missing in the past 20 years. What can the UN do to get aid into war-torn Syria? The U.S. Democratic National Committee Network hacked. A Disney opening sparks a fierce Chinese theme park rivalry. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues. Well, the Orlando shooting massacre has stirred much debate about guns, homophobia, and Islam. And on Monday, presumptive Republican presidential nominee repeated his call for a ban on Muslims entering the United States. And Donald Trump took particular aim at President Obama for not using the term radical Islam. On Tuesday, clearly angered by it, President Obama gave his own fiery speech.
For a while now, the main contribution of some of my friends on the other side of the aisle have made in the fight against ISIL is to criticize this administration and me for not using the phrase radical Islam. That's the key, they tell us. We can't beat ISIL unless we call them radical Islamists. What exactly would using this label accomplish? What exactly would it change?
That's talk more about it with White House correspondent Cindy Sein. Cindy, President Obama seems to have changed his strategy on how he responds to these types of comments from Donald Trump.
Yes, that's right. It was a dramatic change of tone. One day ago, the press secretary had dismissed criticism by presumptive Republican nominee Trump and others of President Obama for not using the words radical Islam or Islamic terrorism when he talked about the threat from Islamic State and other terrorist groups. And the press secretary, Ernest, had just said, well, that was too small to comment on. And we have seen President Obama coming out flanked by his national security advisors, including top Pentagon officials, and just lashing out at Trump and other Republicans, saying, this is just a label. What would this change? Would this get us more allies in the fight? Would this make ISIS stop wanting to kill Americans? And the president was palpably and visibly angry.
Donald Trump also alluded to the president's intentions in his speech on Monday.
Yes, Donald Trump has several times said either the president is clueless and doesn't know what's going on, or he knows better than people think and, you know, there may be something going on. It's just a bit of an insinuation. And the president did not comment directly on that, but he did comment on the Donald Trump's call to ban all Muslims from immigrating to the U.S., saying that this country was founded on basic freedoms, including freedom of religion. He said there is no religious test in this country, and that that would actually make the United States less safe instead of more safe, because we do a good job of integrating Muslims into our society, and that's important.
Now, have we heard any response about the president's speech from either side?
No. Donald Trump, who's usually prolific on Twitter, has not commented. So far from Capitol Hill, I have not seen a lot of Republicans coming up to rush to Trump's defense. As a matter of fact, some, when asked whether they still support Trump, are not commenting.
Do you think this is only the beginning, if Donald Trump continues to take aim at the president, that the president will now use this strategy instead of sort of sitting back and just sort of discounting what he says?
Yes, that's a good question, because it seems that, you know, the president tries to stay above the fray to some degree. But perhaps now he's going to be out on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton, and we may see more of his this fiery rhetoric that we've seen so far.
All right. Thanks so much. VOA White House correspondent Cindy Sein, we appreciate it. The president's outrage is not stopping Donald Trump from continuing to take aim again at President Obama and Hillary Clinton.
Since 9/11, the United States has admitted more than 500,000 immigrants from countries where being gay is punishable by death. Hillary Clinton, Crooked Hillary, as we all know her by, Crooked Hillary, which is what she is, wants to increase these immigration numbers very, very substantially. She's no friend of women, and she's no friend of LGBT Americans. No friend, believe me.
Well, Clinton responded with an equal amount of anger.
He went on TV and suggested that President Obama is on the side of the terrorists. Now, just think about that for a second. Even in a time of divided politics, this is way beyond anything that should be said by someone running for president.
Well, worried Republicans are scrambling to distance themselves from Trump's inflammatory response to the Orlando massacre, particularly from his comments about banning Muslims from entering the U.S. Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan, who says he is supporting Trump, did make it clear again that he doesn't agree with Trump's position, and saying he believes there's a major distinction between radical Islam and Islam itself.
Muslims are our partners. The vast, vast majority of Muslims in this country and around the world are moderate, they're peaceful, they're tolerant. And so they're among our best allies, among our best resources in this fight against radical Islamic terrorism.
Well, meanwhile, Muslims around the U.S. have been attending vigils and speaking out against the gunman in Orlando responsible for the worst mass shooting in the nation's history. Elizabeth Lee has that part of the story.
It is Ramadan, a time when Muslims eat only after sunset and a time of reflection.
All of human beings are at a loss.
On Ramadan this year, many Muslims across the U.S. believe it is also a time for them to speak out.
We express our unequivocal and total condemnation of this act.
They condemn the act of Omar Siddiqui Mateen, who authorities say pledged loyalty to Islamic State during his attack inside an Orlando nightclub. From Los Angeles to Washington and everywhere in between, Muslims say the actions of the gunman do not reflect their Muslim beliefs. Here's Hussein Gol of Virginia.
If you're a person of the faith and you have the love of your Creator in your heart, and if your heart is full of love for your Creator, there is no room for a hate, there is no room for a crime. These people are criminals. They use any reasons that they can get to achieve their goals.
Why am I a Democrat?
In Las Vegas, Muslim American Jesse Spey, who is a candidate for U.S. Congress, says the gunman does not represent him.
That person does not speak for me. Therefore, I do not have to apologize for that person, for their conduct. We are just as a Muslim community, and I speak for myself and the entire community of American Muslims in this country. We are as shocked and as disappointed and as hurt as everyone else in this country.
In Orlando, Tariq Rashid says he prefers to call the shooter a lunatic.
We should not call him a Muslim because Muslims don't kill. Muslims are people who live in peace because like Quran teaches us to respect the lifestyle of different communities.
At a vigil in Washington, there was a message to Muslims who are gay.
This discourse needs to center LGBT Muslims, give them a voice, and as an ally, all I can do is provide that platform.
In Los Angeles, the Islamic Center of Southern California held a vigil with a message to the violent extremists.
If you believe in God, you have to believe in human equality and defend the human dignity of every human being. We stand for that religion, not your exploitation of religion. ISIS, you are an abomination.
These Muslim community leaders say unity among all faiths is important. They pledge to counter violent extremism and do their part in healing the nation.
Amen.
Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
International Edition continues. The World Health Organization says large gatherings, such as this summer's Olympic Games in Brazil, do not mean a greater risk of Zika virus transmission. WHO's Emergency Committee on the Zika virus met on Tuesday to consider the possible risks to mass gatherings in countries and cities with a Zika outbreak, including Rio de Janeiro. Dr. David Heyman is the chairman of the Emergency Committee on Zika.
The committee concluded that there's a very low risk of further international spread of Zika virus as a result of the Olympic and Paralympics, which is already low. The risk is already low, and there's very low risk of further international spread from the Olympics.
Well, the games are taking place during winter in Brazil when the spread of such viruses is minimal. The World Health Organization also noting that Brazilian authorities are stepping up their mosquito control measures. American gaming fanatics are paying close attention to an event this week. The Electronic Entertainment Expo, or E3, opened on Tuesday in Los Angeles. Microsoft, Sony, and other big names are unveiling their next big thing for the future of the video game industry. We talk more about the event with gaming expert and journalist Chris Morris, who writes for Fortune, Yahoo.com, and others. Hi, Chris. How many people are expected to attend this year's event?
We're looking probably about 50,000 people or so that are at the actual show itself. It's worth noting this is a trade show, so it's not open to the general public, but this is where the video game industry really starts to roll out its titles for the holiday season and for 2017, to sort of whet appetites for people.
I understand two of the biggest publishers, though, are not going to be there. Is this a sign that interest could be fading, or why is that?
Well, we're not seeing interest fading in video games themselves. I mean, the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are more than 40% higher than their predecessors after being on the market for 30 months. But what we're seeing is that publishers are learning that it's better to talk directly to players instead of using the media, which is a lot of how the information gets out at E3. So Electronic Arts, the second biggest publisher in the industry, is going to have its own event across the street from E3 this year, and that's going to be open to the general public. Sony has its own event later in the year. Sony will be part of E3 this year. Activision, which is the industry's largest publisher, they're not going to have a presence on the show floor, but they will have their games like the new Call of Duty, the new Skylanders, on display at their partner booth. So at the Xbox booth, at the PlayStation booth, you'll be able to see them there.
What about virtual reality and mobile games? How big of a presence will they have?
You won't see a huge presence for mobile games. Those just don't tend to gather the media and the attention and the real interest from people that are hardcore gamers. You will see a lot of virtual reality there this year, though. Oculus will be there, HTC, which is showing off its Vive headset. Sony is going to be rolling out its PlayStation VR headset, and that's going to be a major part of its show presence this year. That's coming out a little bit later this year, and it's coming out at a price point that's a lot lower than what you're hearing for the Oculus Rift or the Vive.
I know this event often features big titles and celebrity appearances.
You never know who you're going to run into at E3. That's the one thing that is I've been going to this show. This will be my 20th year at the show, and it's always a surprise who you run into. It's usually musical acts. That tends to be where the biggest celebrities come. 6 years ago, Activision did this lavish production where they threw essentially their version of Lollapalooza. There were Usher was there, Jane's Addiction, Eminem came out, and Rihanna came out and did a song with him. So, I mean, it was a big concert. This year, you're seeing less of that because it costs a lot of money to bring those sorts of acts in. Blink-182 is going to play a show. I'm hearing that Big Boy and Wiz Khalifa, hip-hop artists, are going to be there. But those are more public-facing events now than the private parties that they used to be.
All right, thanks so much, journalist Chris Morris. Singer Pink is out with a long-awaited new song, and it's causing lots of buzz. International Edition's Susan Yackey talked about it with Border Crossing's host, Larry London.
Yes, it's been 3 years coming, but Pink finally has a brand new song, and this song she recorded and co-wrote along with Max Martin for a film called Alice Through the Looking Glass, which is the sequel to Alice in Wonderland, Johnny Depp, and quite a few other stars from the first one. Yes, the film isn't doing all that well in the box office, but the song did very well. It got as high as a top 10 in the United States, went to number one in Australia. Pink, by the way,'s real name is not Pink.
Well, I guess that much.
It's Alicia Moore, and she's been at it for quite a while and had quite a few songs. She's won 3 Grammys, sold over 30 million records. In 2013, Billboard named her the Woman of the Year.
Wow.
So she's been around for a while, and it's great to have her back. This is kind of preceding a new album. She's been at work in the studio on some new music. And so she's kind of teased us now with this new song, and hopefully she'll have a new album out.
And you are teasing me by not giving me the name of the song.
All right, I'll stop the teasing. It's Just Like Fire.
And I'm wishing they stop trying to turn me off. I want it on. And I'm walking on a wire, trying to go higher. Feels like I'm surrounded by clowns and liars. Even when I give it all away, I want it all.
You You know where I see Pink is on the Ellen DeGeneres TV show.
Yes, she sings the new theme song to the Ellen DeGeneres TV talk show. Mm-hmm. And they've been good friends for years and years. But Pink has been at it a lot longer than Ellen has and released so many albums and has had so many hits. She does well in the United States. And interestingly, she also does very, very well in Australia, where she kind of goes on tour for about 3 months and stays there only in Australia when she does finally go on the road. So it's interesting. And here's another interesting fact about Pink. Her daughter, 4-year-old Willow Sage, who appears in the video for the new song, Just Like Fire, says she doesn't like mommy's voice.
Oh, that's not nice.
I know. She said, please don't sing, mommy. And she made her, there's kind of an agreement between the two of them. She will not sing in the car.
Aww.
Whenever Willow's in the car. So it's kind
of
interesting.
Well, I think of her as being very athletic as far as her act goes.
That's great. She studied gymnastics and was a gymnast when she was younger and growing up and incorporates a lot of that into what she does now on the various award shows she performs and in her concerts on tour. She does acrobatics. She's swinging from a trapeze bar up in the air, and she does all kinds of acrobats. So that's kind of interesting you point that out.
Well, you know, I didn't know why she did it, but now it makes sense.
Yes,
okay.
She's got a background in gymnastics and a great songwriter, too.
You've been listening to International Edition. We'll be back tomorrow, same time and same place. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and you can follow me at Lori London. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El-Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2015, terrorism continued to bedevil significant portions of the African continent. In East Africa, the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab continued launching attacks and suicide bombings in Somalia, frequently targeting Mogadishu International Airport, Somali government facilities and hotels popular with government officials and business people. The terror group also set its sights on Kenya. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In 2015, one of the key developments in the global fight against terrorism has been the increased level of international cooperation and coordination in addressing cross-border and regional terrorist activity. So, for example, the Lake Chad Basin countries formed the Multinational Joint Task Force to confront Boko Haram, while the Horn of Africa nations are coordinating their efforts against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The United States is deeply involved in assisting its partners in their efforts to degrade and dismantle these terrorist threats. The U.S., in partnership with Somali forces, supports African Union forces in maintaining pressure on Al-Shabaab and weakening the group's territorial control in parts of Somalia. In North Africa, the United States helps support the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. Through this program, we have been working with Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunis to build the capacity and cooperation of military, law enforcement, and civilian actors across North and West Africa to counter terrorism. The Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism is a U.S.-funded and implemented counterterrorism partnership that includes Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Tanzania, as well as Uganda, Burundi, Comoros, Rwanda, Seychelles, South Sudan, and Sudan. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
is for, what's